Uh-oh, we're all screwed up. We're already off the rails.
I was like, Jesus, even here?
Welcome, man. Yeah, right. Oh man, that I'm blaming Tommy T on that one. All right, welcome into the Full Tilt Devi podcast, where we stay tilting so you don't have to. Clearly, I'm your host, Dynasty Coach A, joined as always by Andy Starr at A Star FF on Twitter or X. And tonight we're going to be talking about Cornerstone rankings, where you're mixing in the Devi players with the Dynasty players and figuring out who you want. Where and all that kind of good stuff. It's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's important to start thinking about this kind of stuff because it also helps you, you know, think about what kind of picks you want. Do I want to sell my picks? Do I want to buy more picks? You know, yada, yada, yada. But first, we got some news and notes we got to get into. I'm just going to start. It's not the first one on the list, but I'm going to start with it because it's the sad one. I want to get it out of the way. Our boy, Jonathan Brooks, tore his ACL last week, and it's just absolutely devastating. I don't know what to do. Andy's pouring one out for him.
I was gonna pour one out.
That's all you can do, really. I don't know. Like, we were pimping Jonathan Brooks at the beginning of the year, and then it came to fruition. He is became a stud, like a true stud. And then, you know, in what, week 11, he tears his ACL. Like, it's just terrible. So I don't know what he's gonna do. I've been listening to podcasts talking about, you know, it doesn't really make sense for him to come back because he's probably gonna have a lot of or come back to college because he's gonna have a long time of you know, rehab and everything. Is he even gonna be able to be at full health at any point next year, to where going back to college makes sense? And that might be true. I mean, I really don't know. Like, at first, I'm just like, oh, he's automatically going to college. But the more I think about it, and after listening to those pods, I'm like, yeah, that actually makes sense. Like, does it make any more sense for him to go back? Or does he just go to the NFL? He's not going to go to the combine, obviously. He's not going to work out for any of that stuff. But he just goes, look at what I did last year at a major program. You just drafted my predecessor in Bijan Robinson. And now look what I'm doing. Draft me. But how do you feel about that, Andy?
Well, I mean, it's not unheard of for somebody to tear their ACL in November and come back and be ready in September. So the man has options. I think that he has put enough on tape right now to say, let me just go pro and let's do it. You know, the running back class is down this year. You know, it's kind of down next year too, honestly. So, but I feel like there's a little bit more competition next year. Also, you know, with everyone's saying with him coming back, you know, he's got to worry about CJ Baxter, who's been good this year. But to them, and I'm not saying that this is exactly what would happen if he did come back, but we were talking pre-show about how this is so similar to what happened with Blake Corum last year, where he was having this stellar junior season. Going to be, you know, one of the top running backs coming out in the class and then has this devastating knee injury right at the end of the season. And then it was Donovan Edwards who came in and played great. And then Blake Corum surprised everyone and said, hey, I'm coming back to Michigan. And then everyone said, like, oh, I don't know if that's such a great idea. Donovan Edwards has looked so good. He's probably going to, it's going to be more of a 50-50 timeshare. And now we've gone through the season and we've seen, you know, Blake Corum still has the lion's share of that workload. So I don't know if that's how Texas is going to operate, but I don't think it's out of the question if he does decide to return that Jonathan Brooks can't maintain that same workload. I don't know if it's going to happen, but it's certainly possible. But my ultimate feeling is that he should go pro. He's probably still going to be a day two pick just based on what we've seen so far. You mentioned his predecessor, Bijan Robinson. Roshan Johnson was also his predecessor there too, and he was also a high draft pick, high relative to the running back position. And, you know, he's had some spots in the NFL where he's looked pretty good too. So,
and Jonathan Brooks looks way better than Roshan Johnson ever did. So.
Oh, for sure. Yes, absolutely. I mean, he does have the benefit of being the starter, but yeah, absolutely.
Right.
So, I think he should go pro. Obviously, he's not going to be able to do the workouts like you said, but You know, there's a chance that he can do some stuff, some, you know, maybe some non-contact, obviously non-contact stuff, but work out at the pro day, put some stuff in front of the scouts. And, you know, I think he's still put enough down to where he'll be a day two pick. And, you know, that's good enough for me. Like I said, the ACL injury, it seems like it's a variable. Like it could be 9 months. It could be 12 months. I don't know what that depends on. I'm not a orthopedic surgeon, but it seems like there is a wind, you know, a short window and a long window. So I'm hoping it's one of the shorter windows for Jonathan Brooks' sake. So we'll see what happens.
I mean, honestly, I want him to go to the NFL. I don't want him to go back to college, you know, because I think we've even seen Blake Corum is looking good. He's still the lead back. I don't know that he looks as good as he did last year. And I don't know if it's because of the injury, because of the offense. I don't know. Donovan Edwards went from looking like a stud himself to looking absolutely terrible. So that can definitely play a part as well. Maybe it really is the offensive line has kind of fallen off a little bit, that kind of thing. So who's to say that the same thing doesn't happen next year? And, you know, while we're on the subject, we can go ahead and roll into, because we don't even know who the starting QB is going to be next year, or anything really going on with that Texas offense. So there's a lot of question marks. I'd rather just have Brooks go to the NFL, you know, even if he ends up being a fourth round draft pick rather than a third, you know, like in the grand scheme of things, is it really going to matter? Maybe for him it does, but for us, you know, it definitely won't change much, at least for me. You know, I'd still be pretty damn high on him. But that brings us to, you know, like the next thing here on the list is Quinn Ewers. Is he returning? Is he going to the NFL? You know, obviously we've had a lot of speculation already here on the pod, but I feel like a lot of people are still split on it. And I don't really know why, because I don't think that he's actually shown anything that shows that he should be going to the NFL right now. Now, I've said that about other quarterbacks in the past, and they've still gone and you know, put their name in to the hat and everything. So it's not that crazy. But how do you feel about Ewers, and do you feel like he should be coming back? And then obviously we can get into like all the ramifications if that does happen.
Well, it was reported that he is coming back. Obviously it's not confirmed. But you know, some well respected sports journalist accounts are saying like, yeah, we got it on good, you know, good authority that Ewers will be back at Texas next year. I think if that's the case, if he's deciding to come back, that kind of says he's feeling like he's had the job solidified. He's going to be the starter next year. We haven't really seen Arch Manning at all. And I don't think that we will this year at all, because they've also got Malik Murphy on the team, who is pretty good in his own right as a recruit and, you know, as a player. He's not too bad either. As far as Quinn Ewers, like, obviously the Alabama game was fantastic. He goes into Tuscaloosa, throws for 350 yards and 3 touchdowns. And then, you know, we kind of saw that lull that we saw last year. Last year, we kind of thought it was injury related. This year, you know, we didn't really have that to fall back on. But he has looked, I would say, a little bit better in the last 3 games that he's played. Obviously, he did have the injury a couple weeks ago, but he did come back against TCU, which isn't like an amazing defense by any means, but he did look pretty good against them. A couple big time throws, threw for over 300 yards. The accuracy has been there all season. Adjusted completions right around 80%, and yards per attempt all season's at 9. So the thing for me is he's not making like spectacular NFL-like throws, and we really haven't been seeing it too much from a lot of these guys that are going to be going pro in 2025 now, assuming Ewers stays a year. So when I'm looking at the rankings of like who is going to be the QB1 next year, we mentioned Jackson Dart. I think that's, you know, and that's a variable too. Like, he could certainly decide to go pro this year too. I don't think he should, but it's within his right to do so. A lot of people are bringing up Carson Beck from Georgia, thinking that he'll stay another year and maybe he'll be the QB1 next year. There's also Drew Allar, you know, the highly touted five-star freshman a year ago who has kind of struggled this year, but at times has looked pretty good. And then, of course, there's Connor Wigman at Texas A&M, who is now going through a coaching change. So it's entirely possible that he doesn't even stay at Texas A&M this year. So there's a lot of things up in the air with the QB class in 2025. I really am not comfortable saying, like, who's QB1. I think Ewers is in that conversation. If you're going to, like, look at their – just looking at the crop of guys we have to choose from, you know, I'm not saying that he's got it locked down by any means, but just looking at those group of guys that I just mentioned, like, you could almost just put all their pictures on a wall and throw a dart blindfolded and, you know, just whoever it hits, go with them.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like there's more insulated value in the other position. So QB is probably a position that I'm going to end up fading this year for the 2025 class anyway, until, you know, we get some more information next year.
Yeah, I agree. Honestly, we've seen Quinn, like you said, be better in the past few games, but I think it's more he's completing more of his passes. He's being a little safer with the ball, but he's becoming more of a game manager by doing that. We see the big time throw rate go way down. It actually split in half from last year, from 6.3% to 3.1%. And then we see the intended air yards go down from 10.5 per play down to 8.7. And that's not what you want to see from your future NFL quarterback. So I definitely don't like that. So while we're seeing him be better, like I said, it's more game manager-ish. And, you know, that's not definitely somebody that I'm like focusing on in the first couple rounds of a Devy draft or anything like that. Like, that's just not going to happen. That being said, like you said, the 2025 class isn't looking all that great. So he's still a top three 2025 QB for me, but that's not saying much, you know, whereas like right now, I feel like there's five very qualified, or at least there's three very qualified candidates for the 2024 class. Then there's two other candidates that I think are perfectly acceptable to be in the NFL, like could be starters, all that kind of stuff. So I feel pretty good about five quarterbacks this year. Right now, I'm really only feeling good about two, maybe three for next year. And that's just not saying much. So, you know, as like I said, I think he should be top three. I just don't know if that actually means anything. And like you said, when it comes down to it, I'm drafting running backs over him. I'm drafting wide receivers over him. And, you know, if he's still there in the later rounds, then I'll go ahead and take Quinn Ewers at that point.
Yeah, and I just don't know what that number is for me. Like, how far would you let him drop if you were in, like, a Devy startup? Would he be a second-round pick? For me, I don't think I would take him in the second round if I'm starting a Devy league right now.
It's not like the running backs and wide receivers are looking all that much better, though. I mean, that's the class is just bad. I mean, like, at least right now. Like, obviously, it can easily get better and everything, but right now, the class is bad. Like, it's just clear and cut. And I guess there is a point where you have to draft Ewers, and I don't know exactly where that line is right now, but, you know, like, I'm taking a Jaden Ott over him. I've dropped Nicholas Singleton down my ranks, but I still think he's up there. There's still people saying he's the number one running back in the class. Guys, we got to stop with that. Like, he is not the number one running back in the 2025 class. He's just not. I mean, there's just so many other. I'm trying to think of
the other. You got Judkins. You've got
Ollie Gordon.
Ollie Gordon.
Damien Martinez.
Yes, Damien Martinez.
Trevor Etienne.
Well, I mean, he's been good, but I like
Quinshon.
We mentioned a couple other guys. It's one of running back's a weird position. Like, somebody could just pop off next year, but so
Amari and Hampton,
well, Amari and Hampton's been great, then like the wide receivers, like you mentioned too, like this whole class being down, like outside of Luther Burden and Evan Stewart, like who are you really comfortable saying is going to be this, you know, NFL talent.
Tet McMillan.
I do like Tet. But
Tet McMillan, Squirrel White's actually looked pretty good. Actually more so than I gave him credit for before the year. I think he's actually looked pretty damn good. Evan Stewart, obviously. Nick Anderson. I mean, they're not, that's getting further down the list, of course. I'm just trying to name names. Dane Key, obviously. But that's where, like, we get into those names, and that's where I'm willing to take Quinn Ewers. So, like, at that point, you know, like, I'm probably taking him above a Squirrel White, but below the, you know, Tets, Burden, who else did we say? Oh, Evan Stewart. Then, obviously, you know, like, Jaden Ott, Omarion Hampton, Ollie Gordon. I'm taking him after those guys, too. And I'm taking
the guys were
Jackson
not
Dart. Good.
The guys we're not really mentioning though is the incoming freshmen like Dylan Raiola and Aaron Nolan, just from the quarterback class. And I'm not well versed on the incoming freshmen yet, but you know, we'll get there in the spring. But these are guys that I think I'd rather take a chance on than Quinn Ewers, because you know, they're the 5-star hit rate isn't something to be ignored. So if I can get a 50-50 chance on a guy like that versus Quinn Ewers, who I think is more closer to like a 33-67%, where it's not in his favor in those odds, I think I'd probably lean towards just taking a freshman and hoping for the best there.
Do you not remember my articles from this from the summer? It is not a 50-50 chance. Even on these 5-star QBs. I mean, think about it. We already have people saying that Dante Moore isn't going to be good, you know, anymore. He completely fell on his face. You know, at least early on, and he obviously can get better and be fine. He might even have played this past week. I don't remember now. But then, you know, we've heard people talking about Arch Manning, you know, small school program. Is he going to take over? Is he going to have to wait another year behind Quinn Ewers? Like, there's so many different, Jaden Rashada, Malachi Nelson is obviously a high end recruit and people love him. People are going to draft him early. He also struggled in the spring game. That's just one game. And we haven't really seen him, you know, beyond that. There's been no reason. Well, I guess there has been a reason, but like they were never going to put him in over Caleb Williams. So, you know, but like the truth is that people fell in love with 5 or 6 or maybe even 7 guys, quarterbacks in the last freshman class. And there's probably going to be one of them who actually stands out when it's all said and done, maybe 2. And people aren't going to be happy about that, but that's just the truth. I mean, that's based on the research that I've done. That's what happens. We see it year in and year out. These 5-star high-end prospects, it doesn't matter. Like they fall off the face of the planet, and some of them come back. Like Jackson Dart was a high-end 5-star. People absolutely loved him, completely fell off the face of the planet, transfers out, goes to a new program. All of a sudden actually looks pretty good. So, I mean, it's not like it's the end all be all, but I'm just saying, like, as of right now, like this upcoming year, I wouldn't be surprised if 2 or 3 of those guys just completely fail and fizzle out. And people are like, oh, well, you know, that was a bust. And maybe they'll come back around later on. But yeah, I don't know. It's a lot. It's all, I mean, that's not necessarily what this pod's about tonight, but it's just kind of putting that's around where I feel comfortable putting Quinn Ewers, is like in those ranges. So like you said, it's probably more second round, maybe third round even.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right. Just because the positional value and, you know, where we're at with the quarterback class.
Now, somebody that should be a first round pick, not a third round, Jaden Daniels is absolutely crushing it this year. Maybe possibly putting up one of the best, if not the best, statistical year in college football ever. I mean, between the rushing and the passing and everything, he put up, I think, oh man, I wish I could find it quickly, but I probably can't.
All right. Well, are you talking about last week against Florida?
Yeah.
He had 370 yards passing, 372 yards passing with 3 touchdowns, And then on the ground, he ran for over 200 yards and an additional 237 yards, to be precise, and an additional two touchdowns. So, yeah. And I think that was like the first time anyone's ever ran for 200 yards and thrown for
over 300. That's what I was going to say. I don't remember what it was, but it was either the first time or one of the few times that somebody had rushed for 200 and thrown for 300 in the same game. I mean, he just, and the thing is, he was coming off of a concussion, you know, like we weren't even sure if he was going to be healthy, if he was even going to play. And he just goes out and just absolutely dominates, which he's been doing all year long. People are starting to come around to him, but I still don't feel like he's getting the love that he should get because he's a fifth year player. And so people are like, oh, well, you know, I don't know, fifth year guy, but I go, look at what the NFL's done the past couple of years. Kenny Pickett went in the first round a couple of years ago. Then we get Anthony Richardson this year, you know, completely unproven player, goes fourth overall. Will Levis goes in the early second. Like, you're telling me that Jaden Daniels isn't going to get drafted early? I mean, at the very least, early second in the NFL draft. And then you're telling me that you're not going to draft that guy in the late first round, early second round in your rookie drafts? It doesn't make any sense to me. When we did our rookie mock, what was it, a month ago now? I took Jaden Daniels at what, like 207 or something like that. And, you know, I said, this is going to come as a shock right now, but I think by the time that rookie drafts come around, this is going to seem like a steal. I feel like I was a little prophetic with that one. What do you think?
I tend to agree. I think that the numbers are there. He's doing it at LSU. I'd like to see the team be better than they are, but, you know, they're not bad. They're still a good team.
Their defense is just terrible.
Yeah, it's so bad. Right. I mean, Jaden Daniels can only do so much at the end of the day. The biggest concern is obviously he's got this big, tall frame and he's only 210 pounds. So he's not like the Jalen Hurts model of like this rushing quarterback who's also strong as hell and can do the tush push every single time for 2 yards. But it's going to come down to how the NFL feels about him. Like how his pro day looks, how his combine looks, you know, is he making these NFL throws? Is he able, does his arm strength on par with what the NFL needs? And I'm not smart enough to tell you those answers right now, but all I can do is look at numbers, and the numbers are telling me that yes, you know, this guy is legit. So if you're looking for a QB3 in this class, you know, JJ McCarthy is obviously the guy that we've been tossing around the most this year. I don't think there's any reason why you couldn't say Jaden Daniels as QB3 at this point. So I think if you're getting him in the middle of the second round, like you did in our mock draft, yeah, that is absolutely a steal. I think more likely he's probably going to be like an early second back into the first, depending on where he goes. We don't know what's going to happen in April. Maybe he is a first round pick. And if that's the case, then Dynasty Twitter is going to slobber all over the guy because he's going to have the best rushing upside, even better than Caleb Williams and Drake May, who's pretty well, you know,
well, first of all, rusher in his own right. Drake May has better rushing numbers than Caleb Williams anyway. So, I mean, Caleb Williams is coming in as the third best rushing quarterback. Exactly. And JJ McCarthy's no slouch either. Caleb Williams might be the fourth best rushing quarterback in college football going into the NFL this year. And yet people would never admit that.
You're 100% right. But to my point, like if he goes in the first round, Jaden Daniels, if he even goes in like the back end of the first round, people are going to say, oh, he's the Konami code QB first round draft capital. I guarantee you he will get pumped up to like the top half of the first round if that happens.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, you look at what he's doing and you can't compare the situations, you know, completely because obviously he's a fifth year player. He's played all 5 years. Kyler Murray was basically like a 1 year player just about, but obviously a senior anyway. senior or was he a junior? I don't remember now. But he, either way, like he only played the one like full season. And but I honestly think that they I kind of comp them as players. Obviously, it's different because Jaden is much taller, but he's leaner, whereas Kyler's more of a stocky build. But it's just the it's the rushing ability, but while having the arm, while having that arm that the NFL covets, which you don't see. You know, Lamar Jackson's always been the rushing quarterback. He can get away from anyone. He's so slippery, all that kind of stuff. He's never put together that full passing year because he's just not that kind of quarterback. He's never going to. And then, you know, you see other rushing QBs like Jalen Hurts. He's more of the like bulldozer, you know, Josh Allen, more of the bulldozer. They're not going to be that slippery type. I really think that the best comp for him right now, at least, is Kyler Murray. And I mean, we just saw what Kyler did in his first week back from an ACL tear and all that kind of stuff. He can be explosive. He can be that. What's stopping Jaden Daniels from, you know, from doing the same exact things? And, you know, we see it all with the big time throw rate, the intended air yards, the PPR points per touch. Like, the dude is crushing it in the SEC against the best competition. Maybe they're not winning every game, but that's not his fault. He's putting up 50 points and they lose by two. They lose 52 to 50. You know, like, that's not his fault. He's doing his part. And so I just, yeah, I have no issues. Honestly, like I've been JJ McCarthy's the QB3 in this class for, you know, the longest time. I would never argue with you if you said, nope, Jaden Daniels is the three. I never once would I argue with you. I'm perfectly fine with it. I will be happy getting one or the other or both late in the first round, early in the second round. And I probably will go out of my way to do those things when rookie drafts come around because I want everything. And in one of my C2C leagues, I have JJ McCarthy and Jaden Daniels. And so those two players will be moving to my NFL squad, and that will be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing.
It really is. So I'm getting excited about Jaden. It sounds like you're getting pretty hyped about Jaden. I mean, honestly, it seems like everyone's getting pretty hyped about Jaden, but I feel like there's just a hesitation with the age and, you know, oh, he wasn't quite the same player at Arizona State and, you know, this and that. So I get it, but it's almost like a Joe Burrow thing, not comping the players, just comping the situations where when you see that one year that just absolutely blows up, you just have to believe that that's who that person is now, you know, especially when it's their final year. You just go, okay, that's who this guy is now. Everything clicked and that's, you know, who he's going to be.
Yeah, 100%. And, you know, just one final thought with like the age thing. Like a month ago, we were all fine saying Michael Penix is going to be a first round pick and a first round dynasty pick. And he's dealing with the same issue of, you know, being a, he's going to be a 24-year-old quarterback when the draft rolls around. I don't have Jaden Daniels' birth certificate in front of me, but I'm pretty sure he's not that old. So I'm not concerned about the age. I think that's kind of a non-factor here.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, what he's doing, you know, we're not going to be worried about that age anyway. But transitioning over to the Cornerstone rankings, we're going to take the quickest of breaks and then we'll be right back and we will start talking about Trevion Henderson versus some of these other running backs in the class. Hang on. And we're back. So, like I said, we're talking about the Cornerstone rankings, which is basically comparing Devy players, future rookies going into the NFL versus actual dynasty or, you know, NFL players right now. And we have a list of running backs, wide receivers, quarterbacks, and tight ends here. So we'll start with the running backs. We have Trevion Henderson, Austin Eckler, a misspelled Austin Eckler, I'll give you, because apparently Andy forgot how to spell Eckler. And then Braylon Allen and DeAndre Swift. So we have four players here, Trevion Henderson, Austin Eckler, Braylon Allen, and DeAndre Swift. Andy, make your arguments for, you know, how would you feel about those players?
First of all, why would you do that to me? I told you. I don't know what happened to me. I don't know why I'm misspelling Eckler. It just happened one day, and I used to get mad at people doing that on Twitter, and now it's me. I'm the guy. But
yeah, you're the problem. It's you.
Taylor Swift. This is the Swift podcast. Anyway,
it is the Swiftie podcast. Yeah.
But
and DeAndre Swift. Speaking of Swift, DeAndre Swift.
Wow. What a segue. So, all right, let's talk about Trevion Henderson first. First of all, I think he is getting slightly undervalued based on the raw numbers of what we're seeing this year. If you look at what he's done this season, though, on like a per-touch basis, it's very similar to his freshman year. He's right around a 7% big-time run rate, or excuse me, 7% reception market share, which is where he was at his freshman year. His big time run rate is right around 10%, which is right like his freshman year. So again, the raw numbers are really the only thing that's down since that explosive season that he had, which at that time had us believing that he was going to be the next big running back. And he's actually having his best season in terms of rush yards over expected per attempt. I honestly think it will be a gift if he falls out of the top six in rookie drafts. But that's kind of how I'm looking at it in terms of value. He's probably valued right now, right around a mid first round pick in Dynasty. So then I have to ask myself, would I trade a guy like Austin Eckler or DeAndre Swift for a mid first? For Eckler, I don't think I would, just because he offers such a high ceiling right now that you could go out and win a championship by adding a piece like Austin Eckler, even though he's going to be a free agent next year. So I think I'd probably take Eckler over a mid-first at this point, but I would probably take Trevion over DeAndre Swift, who's also going to be a free agent, but he's currently in that fringe RB1 range on a stacked offense, and I just don't see his situation improving next year, and he doesn't really have that ceiling that I was talking about with Austin Eckler to where, you know, his value is so high that I need to get more than a first round pick for him. With Braylon Allen also having a really great season, he's progressed every year in his usage as a receiver. I think he's obviously behind Henderson at this point. Maybe it's not obvious. Some people probably have Braylon Allen over Henderson. And for me, it's tough to make the call between him and DeAndre Swift, because I think Swift has been consistent this year. Like I said, fringe RB1, but if you look at his production, it's always consistent. You know, he's always putting up decent numbers, right around like 15 fantasy points per week. So I don't think if you're, and again, you know, it's hard to make this value call if we're just like talking about team builds and whatnot. Like, are you contending? Are you not? But for me, like in a vacuum, I don't think I'd let him go for a pick in what I expect to be the back end of the first round for Braylon Allen. So running down the list, I think I would take Eckler just because he's got win a championship right now, which is obviously what we're trying to do in any Devy league. He's got that value right now. Then I would take Trevion. Then I would probably take Swift, but it's really close. And then I would go Braylon Allen.
Yeah, this one's really tough just because you have the extremes of, you know, with age and obviously, and with running backs, it's going to be even more difficult than any other position where like the age isn't going to truly matter. You know, the QB, if we have a 32-year-old QB and a 23-year-old, we're going to say, who's the better QB? With a running back, if we have a 32-year-old running back and a 23-year-old, we're going to say, okay, I'm going to take the 23-year-old. But, you know, I think, well, if you listen to the Dynasty Points podcast, Jacob Sanderson is always talking about how, you know, it really just truly depends on the context of your team. You know, obviously if you're going for a championship, you're going to want Austin Eckler. But the truth of the matter is Austin Eckler has been really bad this year. He's just scoring touchdowns, but like he has been legit a bad running back. Now he's in a good situation. He obviously gets, you know, quite a few checkdowns and all that kind of stuff. So it's working out, but I feel like people are always like, oh, I wish we would have known that he was falling off. I feel like Austin Eckler is falling off. I just, everything that I've seen this year, whether it was the injury, you know, obviously he had the injury early on and now he's back. Whether that's what is making the difference, I don't know what it is, but assuming, you know, if you're going for a championship, it has to be Eckler. I mean, I guess it technically could be Swift, because Swift is obviously putting up good points too, although he's kind of fallen off a little bit recently, where the Eagles have kind of fallen off a little bit. Not, you know, nothing bad. Like, obviously, still amazing. So when it's all said and done, it really boils down to your situation, like what you're doing, because you're not going to trade for a 107 or 106 if you're trying to win a championship. Like, that doesn't make any sense. That, you know, it's never going to happen. But if we're just going, you know, like in a vacuum, like that kind of thing, honestly, I'm putting Eckler at the end. I truly feel like he's falling off. I feel like at some point they've been trying to kind of replace him, or like not really replace him, but they've been trying to, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, compliment him, and they haven't found anyone that can actually do it. But what if they do? You know, what if they draft Braylon Allen? You know, like that kind of thing. And then next thing you know, Braylon Allen's rushing for 50 yards on a second down, and you don't even need that third down play with Austin Eckler, like that kind of thing. So I'm putting Eckler at the end. I'm putting Trevion right there at number one. I really think he's shown that he's a special player. He also has shown that he might not be the healthiest, which is a little scary, but DeAndre Swift has kind of shown that as well. So it's not really all that different as far as that is. And then Braylon Allen has shown that he's a very good running back. I don't know if he's like a truly special running back when it's all said and done. So it was a very long-winded way of saying I'm going to put it Trevion Henderson, DeAndre Swift, Braylon Allen, and Austin Eckler. I really feel pretty comfortable with that. And I guess that's really showing that, you know, like I feel like I have Trevion and DeAndre Swift pretty close to that, like mid first range. And then I have Braylon just slightly behind that. And then I probably have Eckler like closer to like a back end first, you know, like late first range. So like, I'm not saying they're terrible. Any of them are terrible or anything like that, or terrible options. But in the grand scheme of things, these running backs, like the best you can kind of get at this point, unless you're that like tippity top tier, Bijan, Jahmyr Gibbs, Devon Achane, Breece Hall right now, you're not getting much more than a 106, 107 anyway.
That's probably true. And that's just the state of the running back position. And I don't just, you know, I'm not going to say that you're wrong, because you're absolutely right about Eckler being, he'll be 29 here shortly. I don't know if it's going to be this season or in the off season. He's also going to be free agent, like I mentioned. So there's not even a guarantee that he's going to be on the Chargers next year or any team. I mean, I think he's obviously going to be on a team next year. I just don't know what that's going to be and what that situation is going to be looking like. Yes, he's been scoring touchdowns, but I think he continues to score touchdowns because there's really not a reliable running back two on that team right now. And I think he's surpassed 20 points in like the last three out of the four last weeks that he's been back.
Oh, yeah. So don't hear what I'm not saying. Like he has 18.2 weighted opportunities per game. Like, this is not a bad thing. I'm not saying that he's toast or anything like that.
Right.
I'm just saying, like, people say like, oh, I wish I had known this player was, I can't think of a good example right now. I wish I had known this player was going to fall off next year, you know, like, cause he was so good. And then he was just absolutely nothing. And I feel like that's kind of where we are. Like, especially if he goes anywhere else, like, I feel like he's kind of screwed at that point. The Chargers just fit him so perfectly, but he's in a good situation. He's not doing like, he has a 13.2% juke rate. Like, that is not good. I mean, of all the top guys, it's clearly the worst. He has a 3.3% big time run rate, which is also not good. And then he has a 4.4% scrimmage touchdown rate, which is not like insane or anything like that. Like, it's perfectly acceptable, but it's on the higher range. So it's just showing that he's being extremely efficient while being extremely inefficient. You know, if that makes any sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's tough. And, you know, maybe I had some rose colored glasses on when I was looking at this, because to me, I feel like Eckler is a guy that you would add right now at the trade deadlines, if your league has them, to say, I'm going to go all in. And if I'm selling, I would say if you're going to get this player, it's going to cost more than the 106 if you want it. But it's, you know, it's tough to say. But, you know, at the same time, if you're in a full rebuild, you got to, you know, shed points where you can and gain value where you can. And at the end of the day, you might have to take the only deal that's given to you. So it's all league dependent for sure.
Absolutely. And I mean, honestly, like I'd be happy with Travion, DeAndre Swift, or Braylon Allen on my team. I would not be overly happy with Eckler unless I'm truly competing for that championship, which at that point, like even then, I don't want to pay the price that somebody's going to charge me. Like you were saying, like he's probably somebody's going to charge you like a early to mid first, and I don't want to pay it. I probably won't pay it, honestly. I would go find somebody else. Like I just traded for David Montgomery today. And actually, I mean, it was not a huge trade or anything like that, but I mean, I got David Montgomery, Jalen Warren, and Treylon Burks, which people absolutely hate Treylon Burks right now. But if you look at it, we're off on a tangent, but that's what we do. So, if you look at the Titans situation right now, like Will Levis is not the future. Will Levis is not a good quarterback. We've known this for years. They have the eighth pick right now, but they're basically tied with a bunch of other teams that are probably better than them. I feel like when it's all said and done, they're going to have a top five pick. And at that point, you know, we've talked about Drake May, Caleb Williams, JJ McCarthy, Jaden Daniels, you know, Bo Nix, Michael Penix, like all these players. I don't really like the latter there, but you know, there's a lot of good quarterbacks in this draft class to where I think they could easily get one if they have a top five or even a top 10 pick. They can always trade up, do that kind of thing. So who's to say that Treylon Burks is just dead? I don't think it's because of a talent thing. I think honestly, it's because of that. I think it was a PCL injury that he had at the beginning of the season, and it just completely sapped everything. And now they have Will Levis throwing. So obviously things are not going to be spectacular. So off of the tangent, back to what we were talking about. But yeah, like I said, I'd be pretty happy with just about any of those players, but I love Trevion, man. I really do love Trevion. I really think he's going to be special. I truly hope that he can be a healthy player in the NFL, because I think he will be Jahmyr Gibbs like, you know, when it's all said and done.
Interesting. I did not have him comp to Jahmyr Gibbs, but I mean, I'll take it.
I mean, honestly, like I think he's a little bit bigger, right? Am I?
I just don't think that? I don't think he has the same receiving profile as Gibbs. Obviously,
I think he has a pretty good receiving profile. I mean, you think of that freshman year. I mean, he was catching a bunch of balls, and maybe it's not. I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs is probably one of the best receiving running backs that we've seen in a while. So I'm not truly comping that, but I'm just saying they both have that ability. They have that game breaking ability as a running back, as a receiver, like all that kind of stuff. I see both of those things. And if anything, Trevion is at least 10 pounds heavier, if not more. So, you know, like he's more of that workhorse size. So I think teams, you know, we had saw so many people being scared away by Jahmyr Gibbs' size and all that kind of stuff. And then now we see that he's literally one of the best, if not the best running back in the NFL right now.
Yep. For context, he has run 10% of his routes outside of the backfield, according to PFF. So he is doing some route running.
He's doing some of it, but I mean that like he's not the receiver that Jahmyr Gibbs is. Like he was literally running like wheel routes and stuff like that. You know, like he's running like legit routes and not just little dinks and dunks and all that kind of stuff. So Maybe that wasn't the best comp. I'm just saying, like, I feel like he can be in that tier when it's all said and done. And yes, there's not too many running backs that I feel like can be in that tier right now.
No, you're absolutely right.
And so that brings us to the wide receivers. Speaking of the Buckeyes, MHJ, Marvin Harrison Jr., Jalen Waddle, Chris Olave, and Malik Nabers. This one is a lot more fun than I think the last one was, because I feel like when it kind of boiled down to it, it was for the running backs, it's like, are you young and do you catch, you know, are you a receiving back? That's kind of what it boils down to. And so it's like easy and boring. This one, beyond maybe the first one, is probably a lot more interesting, I would think.
All right, well, I'll go first. So Marvin Harrison Jr., potential 101, like you had him, John. I think you were ahead of the curve here now as we're starting to see. I don't know.
I'm noticing a pattern.
I don't know if it was the faults of Caleb Williams, but I think they're starting to become more apparent. Like, cracks in the armor, essentially. Like, you know, Caleb Williams isn't this bulletproof prospect that we had him propped up to be even after, like, the first 4 weeks of this season. So if I'm valuing Marvin Harrison as the 101, I'm taking him above all of these guys. He could easily be a Heisman finalist. It's going to be close between him and Neighbors for the Biletnikoff Award this season. But he's been the most consistently elite college wide receiver for the past two seasons. And he's at 6'4", 205 pounds. You know, with his athleticism and route running and versatility, I'm taking that all day, every day. I think he's like a surefire stud in the NFL, like Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson level. You know, that's the type of production we're going to be seeing from Marvin Harrison in his rookie season. Next, I think I'm going to go with Olave. I think he's had a solid year all year this year. He had the great rookie season. So, you know, he's still just a second year player. He's probably, I don't have his age in front of me, but let's say 23 years old. So he's got a lot of tread left on the tires there. He doesn't have the best QB situation, but Derek Carr has been actually surprisingly good this year. Obviously dealing with some injuries.
Derek Carr has been good for fantasy. Like, if you're starting him, he's been okay. He's been getting you like 15, 20 points.
They're not winning games.
He has not been a good quarterback, and he's been terrible for Olave. That's why people were so excited about Jameis Winston taking over, even though Jameis Winston is a terrible, terrible quarterback. But they were so excited because he was just uber targeting Olave over and over again. And I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was like Olave had like 18 yards or something like that. And then all of a sudden he had like, or no, I think it was, he had two targets, maybe one reception going into the point where Jameis Winston took over this past game. And then all of a sudden he had 11 targets when it was all said and done. And it just goes to show you that, you know, the difference in the two styles of the quarterbacks. Now, once again, Jameis Winston is not a quality quarterback. And so it didn't actually work out as far as them winning the game or anything, but it's great for our fantasy purposes. So, I would definitely have to have you backtrack a little bit there, saying that that Derek Carr has been a good quarterback.
All right, he's been a good fantasy quarterback. You're absolutely right. So even with, let's say, the subpar work of Derek Carr, Olave hasn't been like terrible at all really this season. He's had a couple down weeks, but he's been serviceable even on his off weeks, to where you're like, you're not upset with the production. So that's why I'm taking him at number two here behind Marvin Harrison. And then, you know, between Waddle and Neighbors is where it gets a little bit tricky for me. But again, we're speaking in terms of dynasty value. Even though Waddle hasn't been as great this year and it's been all Tyreek Hill, I still think he's worth more than whatever pick ends up being Malik Neighbors. So let's say like the 104, which is where I'd probably put Neighbors at right now. So I would take Waddle over Neighbors because I think he's in the quote unquote shadow of a literal historic season right now from Tyreek Hill. And the running game has been really solid, really good. So they haven't really needed to use that ancillary production from the wide receiver too, but I obviously believe the talent is still there. So I would take Waddle over Neighbors, which is no disrespect to Neighbors. I still think he's going to be a good wide receiver in the NFL too. I just think Waddle's already shown it on, you know, on paper. So I would take him at three and then put Neighbors at four.
Yeah, like I said, I think this one's very interesting. And I honestly can't even argue with you as far as like what's right and wrong. It's really close after MHJ has to be number one. there's not too many what I call tier zero players that come around, and yet he's one of them. Another one was Ja'Marr Chase. Another one was Justin Jefferson before that. And so, like, when you get these tier zero players, Joe Burrow is also a tier zero player. Bijan, obviously, tier zero. It's just like you're beyond the first tier. You know? You're just that much better, like that kind of thing. Then you just take them and you don't question it. You don't take a quarterback over him. You don't take anyone else. And that's why I took MHJ at 101 in our mock, because he's tier zero and you just take that player and you run with it. Yeah, there's a chance that Caleb Williams is better in the grand scheme of things, like fantasy points wise and all that kind of stuff, and fantasy value wise, because he's a QB. There's a chance Drake May does that. There's a chance JJ McCarthy does, or Jaden Daniels. But the safety net that you have in a tier zero player, that it's unbelievable. Like you know they're going to be studly. At the very worst, they're going to be like a back end of the first startup value. Oh no. You know, like that's the kind of guy that I want. And obviously we know that great quarterback prospects have failed in the past. I mean, look, people are starting to question Trevor Lawrence right now. He was considered one of the most generational best prospects in the history of college football. And now people are like, oh, I don't know, he's QB 20 on the year, and he, you know, he's just not very good, and yada, yada, yada. So I would just much rather take a player that I kind of just almost like bust proof, I would say. Here's where I'm going to differ, though. I don't think that Malik Nabers is that far behind him. And maybe that's me being, I don't know. Maybe it's just me being optimistic, I guess. But, and maybe it's because of this historic season that Jaden Daniels is having. But, I mean, like, Malik Nabers is putting up numbers that are so close to MHJ that it's like, I don't know how you can say that they're that far off. Now, I don't have them extremely close, and I don't have Malik Nabers as a tier zero player. I have him in the same tier I would have had a Jalen Waddle in his rookie year, or even a Chris Olave in his rookie year. So, like, I kind of have them all the same, but there's the question mark of, can Malik Nabers go to a good situation? Whereas we know that Chris Olave is in a bad situation with Derek Carr, that they just signed a contract, you know, with, and now they're already starting Jameis Winston. There's injury concerns, yada, yada, yada. And then Jalen Waddle, where he's starting to like really show that he can't stay healthy. And even when he is, he's still the number two. And obviously there's no way that I can prove to you that Malik Nabers won't be a number two on some, you know, squad, that he doesn't end up going to the Bengals. They let go of T. Higgins and all of a sudden he's on the Bengals and he has Ja'Marr Chase in front of him. Okay, you know, that's going to change things. But like, I'm just saying there's enough ambiguity, and I appreciate the player enough to where right now I feel like I might have Malik Nabers above the rest. And then honestly, I think I would have Jalen Waddle third and then Chris Olave in fourth, just because I truly have all these players very pretty close. I won't say very close, but I was pretty close. But man, Olave just scares the crap out of me because of Derek Carr. Because I like, what are they going to do if they don't bring someone else in, which I don't even know if they can? You know, they have salary cap issues and everything else going on. Obviously they have the contract to deal with as well. I don't know if they truly can. And Derek Carr is just proving to not have, you know, not be the right guy, the right fit for this offense.
Yeah. And that was the idea of this entire exercise, is like, we didn't want to grab four guys that were, you know, obvious picks. So, you know, the fact that they're all very closely ranked is a good thing. You know, we can kind of have this discourse. So, you know, and I'll just echo it, that idea that, you know, I can't really argue with what you're saying, because there's certainly a great chance that Malik Nabers ends up being better than both of those guys.
And I mean, I took Malik at 104, and it almost surprised me when I did it in our mock draft, because I didn't even realize that I felt that way about him. And like, I don't feel any different today. Like I'd still take him at 104. And, Yeah, I think that when it's all said and done, he's going to be that 104. I don't know. I mean, are you paying a 104 for Jalen Waddle right now? Are you paying a 104 for Chris Olave right now? I don't know that you are.
I mean, if I could get those guys and I had the 104, I think I would. I mean, I think their value is already solidified. I think they're going to be good for the next, you know, at least 4 to 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a bad trade by any means. Yeah. Like, I'd be fine with it, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know that I'm going out of my way to make that trade.
Right. You know,
and I mean, it's probably what it takes too. Like, no one's going to trade Jalen Waddle for less than that. I'm just saying, I don't know that like people are going to be going out of their way to be like, oh yeah, you know, I'm sending the 104 for Jalen Waddle. It's like, that's kind of his price at the beginning of the year. You know, we've seen things change, you know, like I said, the back concerns, the knee concerns, he hasn't really put together like what, two healthy weeks this year. And then Chris Olave hasn't put together two quality weeks this year because of the situation. I still love both of the players. I still believe in both their talents, and it's always talent over situation. So I'm not saying I don't want them. I'm just saying I don't know if I want to pay for them.
Right. Yeah. And then we get back into the discussion of like, oh, what's the situation of your team and everything like that. So that's why these conversations are always tough, because obviously if you're competing and you have a 104, yeah, you're probably like, oh, okay, I'll take a chance on Jalen Waddle. But if you're not, are you? And then that's the other thing. Like, if you're not competing, are you really going to trade like a young wide receiver for a draft pick? Probably not. So I don't, it's tough. It's tough. And that's kind of the purpose of this whole discussion, is to, you know, try and parse out value with guys that are close in value.
Yeah, I just wonder if you're trying to go get somebody else if you have a 104 rather than Jalen Waddle right now, because I mean, like I said, he hasn't really put together two quality games. So I still believe in the talent. I still believe in the players. But yeah, I would have an MHJ, Malik Nabers, Jalen Waddle, and then Chris Olave. And then I think you had it. MHJ, Waddle,
Olave, then
Olave, Waddle, and then Nabers.
Nabers.
So that brings us to we'll do the quarterbacks last. But that brings us to the tight ends, which is kind of boring.
You don't even
have the best tight end on here. So I'm gonna go ahead and add Trey McBride to the list here. And so
Okay. Well, all right. You're adding him to the NFL side. Okay.
I'm adding Trey McBride to the NFL side. So we have Brock Bowers, Kyle Pitts, Dalton Kincaid, and Trey McBride as our four tight ends. I've heard some recent mock drafts from other podcasts, and I'm not trying to talk crap about other people, but we gotta stop putting Brock Bowers at 104, guys. Like, this is not, no. And if your argument for any player, I really don't care who it is, except for maybe like Travis Kelce, if your argument for just about any player is in tight end premium, you're probably overvaluing the tight end premium side, because obviously the tight end premium goes to every tight end. And, you know, yeah, of course, like the back end tight ends aren't going to be nearly as valuable because they're not getting the targets and all that kind of stuff. But the top end tight ends, your Laportas and your Kincaids and your McBrides and whoever else, will be getting all of that. So it's not like all of a sudden it makes, you know, Travis Kelce that much more valuable or Trey McBride or whoever. It's just like, it adds a couple points. So Brock Bowers should not be 104. However, how do you rank these tight ends?
So, I mean, I'm going to keep it simple. You added Trey McBride. I would probably take McBride over all of them. And the what I had in mind when I put this on the sheet, because I didn't even want to put tight ends on the sheet, was the point I was going to make is the same thing that you were just trying to say, is that you shouldn't be overvaluing these rookie tight ends, because yes, you might get a Laporta, which he's kind of a unicorn, and Kincaid has been great too. I mean, it took a little bit to get going, even though it's only his first season, but he's been pretty solid as well. Trey McBride,
he's still like the tight end 20 on the season or something.
Yeah,
like that.
Exactly.
Like obviously, so he's progressing better than
it
that.
Took,
and then by the end of the season, it should be better. But yeah, he's not he's a top five tight end or something. You know?
Right. It took a Dawson Knox injury to really like open him up. So, it's tough, man. Pitts is so good, but he doesn't get used. Like he's getting outscored by Jonnu Smith on his own team. So it feels like, and that kind of brings me back to the point with Bowers, is like, are these hyper athletic, like OJ Howard tight end type, these guys that were like can't miss tight ends, like even like going back to like Eric Ebron and Brandon Pettigrew, these early first round draft pick tight ends, are they really like a sure thing? Usually not. I mean, TJ Hockenson's been really good, but it took him a few years to really realize that full potential as well. And we're just seeing it now this year where he's like really a elite tight end. And I don't have any particular order for the guys that we've talked about, but I would put Brock Bowers at the very end of it. And that would just be kind of how I have it. As far as like between McBride, Pitts, and Kincaid, I think you could really just, you know, pick your poison, if you want to call it that, you know, with either one of them, any one of them. But the main takeaway here is like, we need to stop overvaluing tight ends, because we need, with the tight end position, it's more valuable to wait and see which one of these guys hits, because we there's really no predictive value there. Michael Mayer is a guy that really got a lot of hype last year. Then he didn't perform that well in the combine, but he still ended up being like a back end of the first round draft pick, or maybe early second. And he hasn't, I mean, he's kind of done well the last couple weeks, but it hasn't been great this year either for a guy that was drafted as high as he was. So even if Brock Bowers ends up getting top 10 draft capital, which is entirely possible, I would take all these guys that have proven that they can do it on the field before I would take him. And if I'm putting anyone behind him, it'd be honestly Kyle Pitts, because he's been such a disappointment, but that's it.
Yep. Honestly, I think that you said everything that needs to be said about tight ends, and I'm just going to agree with you. I will put Kyle Pitts at four though. I think that I would put Bowers before him. And then, but I want to emphasize that just shows, if Bowers is the tight end three out of this list, that just shows that he should not be the 104. Like, but yet people are wanting to put him there. He's an undersized tight end, which makes it even worse. Like he's not 255, 6'6" or whatever. He's like 6'4", 238. Now he's extremely athletic and all that kind of stuff, but like you said, you know, how much does that even matter? So yeah, I feel it's probably a toss up, but I would probably put Kincaid, then McBride, then Bowers, and then Pitts. Pitts is not getting another quarterback, as far as I can tell. I mean, they might get another quarterback, but they're not drafting like the quarterback of their future. So they're probably going to get some retread. It's not going to be Heineke, most likely. It's, you know, and God knows that they're probably going to get rid of Ritter at some point. But I don't know. They're kind of in like the middle of the draft. So I don't even know if they can truly draft someone unless somebody lets Jaden Daniels fall to them or whatever. I know there's been, hints of Justin Fields being traded over to Atlanta, which would change a lot of minds at that point. But I've also learned over the past few years that like dynasty wanting does not mean that it actually happens. It's very rare that you actually get what you want. Like everyone wanted Derrick Henry to go to the Ravens at the trade deadline. Guess what happened? He did not go to the Ravens. So, you know, it happens over and over and over again. I will not count my eggs until they've hatched. So, yeah, Kincaid, McBride, Bowers, and Pitts. But that brings us to the most important position in all of football, and that's the quarterbacks, and possibly a player that will go save one of these jobs. You know, like maybe Kyle Pitts will get a Drake May or somebody like that. But that's to be determined, of course. But we have Caleb Williams, Tua, Tagovailoa, of course, Kyler Murray, and Drake May as our four QBs here. And this is another good one. I feel like it's definitely topical players, obviously. And then, but you know, more importantly, I think it's kind of difficult. I have a pretty good idea of who I have, but how are you feeling about these players? And I am going to be right back. I will be back in like 15 seconds.
All right. Well, QB is really tough, like you just mentioned. I think for me, I have Tua at number one. And the reason being, there's no reason for me to gamble that position that I already have down and grab one of these rookie QBs. As I stated earlier, USC started to lose some games now. We're seeing some potential flaws in Caleb Williams' production anyway. I don't know if anyone's really concerned that he's not going to be great in the NFL, but like I mentioned earlier, he's not going to be this bulletproof prospect that we had him propped up to be earlier in the year. Drake May, we're all on the same page. Drake May is going to be great, but let's say Drake May hits Tua's production. I think that's kind of a good bar to say, like, okay, that was a good season or a good, you know, good level for Drake May to hit. So if you've already got that with Tua, and I know he's got the concussion concerns, but, you know, he's having such a great season. He's still young. He's on a great offense. He's got a good continuity there, you know, with his coach. I think they're going to be together for a long time. So to me, I'm taking Tua at one just because of the realized potential that he's already got there. Still a young guy, still going to, you know, he's going to have Tyreek Hill for at least another season. Tyreek, I think he said he's going to retire after the 2024 season, but we'll see if that ever comes to fruition.
And 2025, we've already, I think.
About 20. Okay, so he's got at least two more years with Tyreek, who I mentioned earlier is having a historic NFL season. And then the running game is obviously good support for him as well. After that, I think, you know, you can really just toss a coin between Caleb Williams and Drake May. And the reason I have them above Kyler Murray is because of the uncertainty with Kyler Murray. He's obviously on the Cardinals. He missed a lot of the beginning of the year because of that ACL injury. It kind of seems like there's going to be somewhat of a changing of the guard there. So now we've get some uncertainty on where Kyler Murray is going to go moving forward. Which isn't to say he's a bad player. You know, he obviously showed that he's still got it last week and maybe he continues to do that. But just the uncertainty surrounding him makes me feel like I would rather have one of these rookie quarterbacks that I'm pretty sure both of them are going to end up being top five draft picks in the NFL draft, which leads me to believe that they're going to have at least 3 years of starting in the NFL. So I would take that over Kyler Murray, which, you know, I can't say that confidently, although I believe he will probably be a starter in the NFL for 3 years, but you know, there's a lot of questions surrounding him, and I don't know how much of it is just like media hype and whatnot with him being, you know, you see memes about, you know, him playing Call of Duty instead of looking at his playbook and whatnot, which is obviously ridiculous. But I just feel like the situation is going to be more stable with a top five rookie pick than it is with Kyler Murray. So I would take one of those guys, both of them, before Murray. And then, like I said, between Murray and Drake May, I really just don't have a strong opinion about either of them at this point. I think they're both probably going to be good quarterbacks in the NFL. I just don't know which one is going to be better. So to recap, one, Tua, two and three, May and Williams, and then Kyler Murray at four.
So I think for this one, for the quarterbacks, you know, it's such a different argument than everything else because – quarterback value swing so drastically, even week to week and everything. And especially when it comes to rookie running or quarterbacks, it becomes this thing where like almost seems like the value for like the 101 can't be high enough, you know? And like you said, Caleb Williams up until a few weeks ago was just being pushed up to an insane level, generational prospect, you know, can't miss, all that kind of stuff. And now we're seeing people kind of backtrack from that. But I still feel like we're seeing a lot of people saying, oh, it doesn't matter. I don't care that he's fallen off. He's still my 101. And I feel like that's kind of silly because, I mean, we've seen things change. You have to change with the times, with the new information that you have. But there, it becomes that argument of, do you want the value of the player or do you want the best player? And my whole thing is I always want the best player. Like, the value is cool, but that's how you get, you know, that's how you end up with a Sky Moore, and, you know, and that's how you end up with a Desmond Ridder and players like that, because they had value, but they weren't actually good players. I feel like all four of these players are good players. So, like, I don't think you have to truly worry about any of that, but we've seen Kyler Murray be a top five QB every time he's touched the ball and been healthy. He's back healthy now. They took their time. They had patience with him. They gave him extra time to come back, you know, at full health. No one rushed anything. He came back, looked exactly the same as he always has in week one of coming back. And there's nothing that leads me to believe that he won't be a top five QB in the NFL. Now, people hate Kyler for whatever reason. He's short, Call of Duty. You already mentioned it all. And you know, like, he wore that one lime green pantsuit that one time that looked like he was a strong, independent woman that didn't need no man. But, you know, so like, people hate him for you know, for a bunch of different reasons. It actually was pretty bad, but. But when he's on the field and he's wearing a jersey and not a 1990s pantsuit, I feel like he's the best quarterback on this list, the most proven quarterback on this list. And sure, maybe the Cardinals have given up on him. I don't think that's the case. I don't think they've shown us at any point that they've given up on Kyler. But let's just go ahead and say they are. He still has a $250 million contract that somebody has to pay for. So if they go trade him to another team, and then they go draft a Caleb Williams, Drake May, or whoever, he's still a starting QB for another team. He's still going to be a top five QB for another team because that's just who he is. He's a top five fantasy QB when he's on the field. The one ACL tear doesn't scare me as far as like being injury prone or anything like that. So I got to start off with Kyler Murray at one. No one else has truly proven that they can be what Kyler is. Tua has proven that he is a quality QB, but look at the situation that he's in. He has Tyreek Hill. He has Jalen Waddle. You know, he has Devin Achane. He has all these players that he can, you know, toss the rock to. It's more about situation, even more so than talent. Now, I like Tua. I think he's a talented player, but I feel like I got to put him last here. I think that he's more, like I said, he's more situation than talent. What if Tyreek Hill were to tear his ACL? You know, like, what if, you know, that kind of thing happens? Is Tua what Tua's been the past, you know, year or however long? Obviously, there's the head concerns, the concussion concerns as well. I'm pretty much over that, but I guess it's, you know, it can have a small part to play here in the ranking. And then you have Drake May and Caleb Williams. Drake May has been a better quarterback than Caleb Williams at every single part of his career, college career. People just don't want to admit it. So I have to take Drake May here as, and that's not to say that Caleb Williams isn't good. It's not to say that Caleb Williams isn't almost as good as Drake May. But Drake May's proven to be a better running quarterback. Drake May's proven to be a better passing quarterback, and he's doing it against better defenses than Caleb Williams. Now, it's the ACC. It's only slightly better, but he's doing it against better defenses than Caleb Williams is. And then Caleb went up against the slightly tougher defenses that he has to go up against in the Pac-12, and he completely tanked. Things got really bad. So, yeah, give me Drake May, then give me Caleb Williams, then give me Tua Tagovailoa. So I feel like they're all quality starting quarterbacks. When it's all said and done, I would be very happy having any of them on my teams. So this is not to hate on any of them. but I got to go Kyler, Drake, Caleb, and then Tua.
All right. That's fair enough. Like I said, the idea here is to pick guys that were very close. So I think we got a good variety of opinion here.
Yeah, and honestly, the Tua thing has been kind of wild because, you know, no one wanted him in the offseason with, you know, the head injuries and is he even going to be the starter? Is he ever going to play again? All that kind of stuff. Then he comes out and completely lights it up in the first few weeks. People are like, oh my God, he's a top five dynasty QB. And then, you know, things have kind of come back down to earth since then. But I really feel like Tua, assuming health, is going to be one of those long-term QBs that's just around for the longest time, you know, one of those back-end QB1s in fantasy for the longest of times. And so I'm perfectly fine having that on my squad, but man, I feel like those other three just have so much more upside.
Yeah, that's fair.
So hopefully that's shown how close all of these players can be. I really feel besides the running backs that it was very close for all these positions. Austin Ekeler can get the hell out of here. He's just too old, too washed. Other than that, I'm feeling pretty good about just about every single one of these players, and I'd be happy with pretty much any of them on my team, except for Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts can get the hell out of here too. But enough about tight ends. Do you have anything else to say about the Cornerstone rankings before we move on to the game of the week?
That's all I got, man.
All right, we're going to take the quickest of breaks again, and then we'll be right back. And we're back. So now we're going to get into the game of the week. And this one is probably going to be, or at least on paper, it's a good one. I don't know if it's actually going to be a good one when you're watching it. And it's Georgia and Tennessee. We have Georgia 10.5 point overdog. And I just don't know why that is. Georgia's been coming on strong lately. Carson Beck's been looking a lot better. The offense has been looking better for Georgia. Maybe the defense isn't amazing. But Tennessee isn't Tennessee from last year to where they're going to go put up 50 or something like that. And so I don't really understand why this game is as close as it is, even though obviously Lucas, if he were here, would say Vols by 50.
He certainly would. And unfortunately, his Vols really struggled last week, only scoring a touchdown on the road against Missouri. And then, yeah, like you said, Georgia's really turned it on. I mean, ever since they kind of half-assed their way to a victory against Vanderbilt in October, they've blown Florida out of the water. They had a tough game against Mizzou, but as we've seen, Missouri's actually pretty good this year. And then last week, they just destroyed Ole Miss 52-17. So the fact that they're only a 10.5-point favorite, I get that they're on the road, that's in Rocky Top, but I mean, who on offense from Tennessee outside of, like, you know, let's say, I mean, even Jalen Wright, and they've kind of put Dylan Sampson in the back seat in the last few weeks. Who on offense has really shown that they're going to be able to score points on this Georgia defense, which, you know, it's not an elite Georgia defense like we've seen in the years past. But like I said, since this Vanderbilt game where, you know, they gave up 20 points to a really bad Vanderbilt team, they have given up 20 points to Florida, 21 to Missouri, and Ole Miss only 17. You know, Ole Miss with Jackson Dart and Quinshon Judkins has a pretty good offense, and I don't think Tennessee's anywhere near that level at this point in the season. So, you know, where are we finding these points where it's going to be only a 10.5-point or, you know, a 10-point game, let's say, where Tennessee's going to cover that spread? I don't see it. I think Georgia with Carson Beck, who's been playing really well since Ladd McConkey has come back, who's been really well. Brock Bowers is obviously healthy again. He was back last week. So they're going to be running at full power on offense. And I don't think Tennessee is going to be able to keep up with them. It's going to be kind of it might end up being a bit of a bloodbath. And I'm happy that Lucas isn't here to hear all this, because I'm sure it would upset him a little bit.
bet. It's so crazy that Bowers was back. I mean, they were talking about a full season. They were talking about him possibly messing with the combine with that injury and all that. And then he's just back. It's like, okay.
3 weeks. I mean, like, all right, surgery, I'm home. I'm back. I'm ready.
Yeah, that's wild, man. Yeah, I don't get into betting lines and everything. We've done the game of the week here where we've made these arguments for why we feel a certain way and everything. But man, I'll tell you, 10.5 just does not feel like enough. I feel like, you know, it's a lot closer to Georgia by 50 than Vols by 50. So absolutely. I feel like I'd be betting that. But then again, I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's a trap game. I don't know. Like, Vegas feels a certain way for whatever reason. I don't see any reason to think that Tennessee's just going to do it. And like you said, they've been taking away from the running game. They were running. Tennessee was running like crazy with Jalen Wright and Dylan Sampson. And I can tell you, I have them in C2C leagues, and they have not been running with Jalen Wright and Dylan Sampson recently. I don't know if it's an offensive line thing. I don't know if it's a philosophy thing or what, but it has not been working out. So it'd be one thing if it was just Dylan Sampson or just Jalen Wright, but it's both of them. And so, like, how can you feel great about that offense in general? Yeah, like, there's some players that stand out, but, like, nothing insane, nothing that I would be willing to say, oh, yeah, like, they're going to cover here. So I really don't get it at all. But like I said, Carson Beck has been standing out recently, and he's starting to get a lot of buzz. We've seen, like, Dane Brugler talk about Carson Beck as a top 50 option in the NFL draft this year. We've seen a lot of other analysts, Devy analysts and NFL analysts and everything talking about Carson Beck possibly being a quality prospect right now, or at the very least next year, you know, coming back and doing it next year. I feel like, you know, if we're just going based off of my rankings and how I look at things, I feel like he should come back and he should get another year under his belt. But if he truly is getting that much hype, then I don't know, maybe you should just take advantage of it and just go to the NFL and deal with the repercussions.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what he does, because, I mean, he's going to be losing Bowers, we assume, and probably Ladd McConkey. I mean, I'm assuming Dominic Lovett will come back. It's Georgia, so I'm sure there's going to be a whole slew of other wide receivers coming in as well. And the running game hasn't been anywhere near like Georgia level this year. So I'm assuming the running game is going to take a step forward next year as well, just because they can't really go back from what they did this season. Even though Dejon Edwards has really done better than I thought he could, which isn't saying much, cause I thought he was terrible, but he has done better anyway. I will say that, but
Your yeah, boy finally broke out. It only took 4 years, but Kendall Milton, 127 yards rushing and 2 touchdowns last week against Ole Miss.
I know. Watch him be a day two pick, man, just because he's got that Georgia G next to his name. It's going to happen.
And he'll be the next Isaiah Spiller.
Well, that would be horrible.
Or no. Spiller wasn't Georgia.
No, you think it. James Cook? That would be good option.
No, the Raiders one. Why can't I think of his damn name?
Oh, geez. Z, it starts with a Z. Zeus, they call him.
Damn it, I can't think of his name.
Zamir White.
Hold on. Thank you.
I got it. Zamir White.
You did get it. Okay, so yeah, he's going to be the next Zamir White, because he is not a good running back, and I don't care that he goes to Georgia, and just all there is to it. I tried telling you in the off season. I tried telling you last season.
Now he got hurt nothing again.
Yeah, that's all he does is get hurt. People are worried about Trevion Henderson, and yet Kendall Milton has probably gotten hurt 85 times in his 3-year career.
Well, all I said was he was going to be the RB1 for Georgia, because I thought people were hyping up Branson Robinson, which none of this happened, obviously, because of the Branson Robinson injury. So. Right.
But also it was Dejon Edwards, not Kendall Milton.
Yeah. Well, yeah, yes. Until now. Now Kendall Milton's fully healthy, so we're finally seeing the breakout. That's
it, man.
That's how I'm
doing. We just had to wait. We had to wait until week 11 of his final year. Then that was it.
We finally got it.
So how do you feel about Beck, though?
I like Beck. I think he should stay as well. And it's kind of the same argument we were talking about with Jackson Dart last week. Like, we should be sending out offers with him in mind as the QB one potentially of 2025, more so than the QB five or six in this class. Because if he does stay, you know, and let's say Branson Robinson comes back and he's fantastic, I don't think that'll happen. I think Roderick Robinson has a better chance of that happening. And this offense starts really clicking and he's the one calling all the shots, then yeah, I'll take Carson Beck. He's not a bad QB by any stretch of the imagination. So why couldn't he be QB one? He's right in that same mix with all these other guys.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't love Carson Beck. I don't think that he's amazing or anything like that, but he is creeping up the model. Every week he seems, for whatever reason, something clicked a few weeks ago and he was like, oh, I can throw now, you know? And so if that continues, then, you know, maybe he can stand out. I guess maybe it could be, I guess. Definitely possible. So, yeah, but it's so weird because he lost Bowers, but then he gained McConkey. Maybe we'll see that, you know, this week with a Bowers back for week two and McConkey, you know, maybe Beck will just completely stand out and he'll be, you know, we'll be like, nope, he has to come out this year. Like, he's just going to be that amazing. But the last question you have here on this list is, would it hurt to give Nico a try over Milton? If you're asking this week against Georgia, yes, it would hurt. That would be a terrible idea. They're going to lose anyway, but you don't want to do that to your true freshman quarterback. If you're asking in week 12, I don't really mind. I don't know who they play, but I don't mind it. Like, obviously Joe Milton's not the future. Joe Milton's not going to be an NFL quarterback. If he is, he's a complete backup. I don't hate starting Nico and giving him a try, seeing what you have, but I do not think it should be this week.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Like, you're not going to throw him into the wolves. That would just be horrible for the guy's self-esteem. But I agree. Milton is not it. He hasn't been great this year at all. So I think they should at least give him a try at the end of the season just to see what he's, you know, what they're dealing with when they're going into the spring. And maybe it doesn't mean starting. Maybe it just says, hey, we'll get Milton out there for the first quarter or something, and then we'll throw Nico in. Because at that point, you know, they're already bowl eligible. They're not playing for any championships or anything. You know, they're not, it doesn't really matter what happens with that game. So see what he's got. Give him a few drives against, you know, the other team's presumed starters and just see how he does. And, you know, let him build that chemistry with guys like Squirrel White, who will be back. And, you know, maybe I'd also like to see some more Dylan Sampson, who I assume, you know, Jalen Wright. I don't know what Jalen Wright's going to do. I thought he was going to go pro, and now I'm not sure. So,
yeah, I mean, it's been such a weird year. I thought it was for sure 100% he was going to the NFL. Jabari Small is just terrible. He'll just fade away into the sunset. And then, you know, and then Dylan Sampson was going to be the number one. I don't know if we can truly say that now. But I wanted to ask you, do you feel like you've learned your lesson about players named Milton?
No. Well, I didn't have,
we got Joe Milton and Kendall Milton. So, you know, do you feel like stay away from any Miltons in future years?
So I was never one on Joe Milton, so I'm not going to take that bullet. But I will keep that in mind next time I find a Milton. I'll be like, well, wait a second. Let's bounce back.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying that you were on Milton, Joe Milton. Yeah. I'm just saying, like, you were on the other one. And we're starting to see that there might be a pattern here. So
there's,
you know,
a pattern.
I might have to write an article this offseason for DLF about the name Milton and see if there's any other Miltons in college football that have busted that we can go, hey, there's definitely a pattern here.
Yeah, I can't think of any off the top of my head, but I mean, the two that we know of, yeah, things didn't turn out like some of us had planned.
Definitely not, but I think that is enough about that. We're just past the hour and a half mark, so we did a pretty good job talking and doing all that. I'm supposed to call my wife when I got done, and now it's 11:11, so I don't even know if I'm going to do that, but I'll talk to her tomorrow. She'll be
shoot fine. Her a text, say it's all good.
Yeah, she'll be fine. It's not like she just left for vacation, or not vacation, go see her family for 8 days, and I'm supposed to, you know, chat with her after the pod or anything. No big deal. No, yeah. I'm just kidding. Great pod. I appreciate you guys listening. Appreciate you, Andy, as always. I enjoyed talking about all these players because I think it's really interesting when you start trying to figure out where they belong. These Devy players or rookies belong in the ranks and everything. So I love playing those games. I love even more than this, where it might be a little more obvious, or it might just be like, oh, it doesn't matter, they're all good. I like playing the game where like you get into like the Trey Palmers and the Jaden Reeds, like, well, Jaden Reed's better than Trey Palmer, but like, you know, like you get into that level, like the Marvin Mims and the Jaden Reeds and stuff. And that's where you start trying to mix in players, because you want to talk about a fun exercise where you really have to think like that. That will make you think.
We'll have to do that sometime, probably this off season, where we're talking about like these second and third round guys and saying like, hey, where are we talking about them in terms of NFL ranks at this point?
Yeah, we could probably get to that, you know, once we have a better idea of who's actually at the Junior Bowl now, you know, and I don't even think we brought that up. We talked about that on the Devy Devotional, but yeah, we have all that now. So we'll have to see who actually, you know, goes to these all-star games and who actually declares for the NFL draft. Because like you said, we both thought that Jalen Wright was going to be there, and now neither one of us is sure. So many people thought Quinn Ewers is going to be there. I'd say people in the know are saying that's not going to happen. So there's a lot up in the air. We'll just have to wait and see who's going to make it, who's not. Obviously we have to wait and see what happens with Jonathan Brooks, but we do appreciate you guys listening as always. Make sure you like and subscribe and do all that kind of good stuff on YouTube, because we are trying to definitely make a push. Tommy T was telling us before we got on here that, you know, there's some possible exciting stuff going on in the background. So, you know, we just need to make sure that we get as many eyes on this stream, on this pod as possible, so that we can prove that we deserve all the good stuff. So, as always, thank you for listening. We will be back in your ears in a couple weeks. Until then, we're going to go ahead and cash out if I find the outro. See you guys.